Welcome to Focused on Life, where we'll be laser focused on all things that have to do with defending human dignity, human rights, and yes, human life at every stage and phase of development. I am your host, Uju.
And I am your other host, Matt.
And we are thrilled to be here today. Hello, Matt.
Hi, Uju. How are you doing today?
Oh, not too bad, Matt. But I think our topic today is going to be so heavy. It's one of those things that many of us don't get to think about. I certainly don't get to think a lot about it. But here we are. We are going to talk about it today. And you and I think we've gone through it a couple of times in the past. And we had looked forward to this episode, Matt, because we're having a guest.
Guest. Our first guest of season two.
That's right. So this is on the issue or topic of euthanasia and assisted suicide. And we are having Alex Schadenberg, who has done incredible work in this, you know, in this area. Very difficult to talk about, isn't it, Matt?
It's a pretty tough subject. And before we get to Alex, we're going to introduce our guests in just a minute. You and I were just chatting briefly before, and you kind of mentioned something that that was a really interesting observation. When you think of euthanasia and assisted suicide, it's such a foreign concept to so many people. It doesn't really affect me. It's something for, you know, well, first of all, people always think, oh, that deals with the elderly, people who are like on the end, you know, they're about to die.
Yeah.
But that's not really the case, is it?
No. I mean, euthanasia, you know, I'm looking forward to how Alex is going to explain it all, because we've listened, you and I, especially you, Matt, we've listened and to Alex's, a lot of his speeches and the work he has been doing, we've followed closely. You see that euthanasia is actually closer, I think, to a lot of us more than we know it. We go through life just thinking, oh, this doesn't really concern us. I was reading something about euthanasia the other day, and I saw it described by one of these European countries as the termination of life by choice or something like that. The choice to termination of life on demand. I think that's how they put it. That sounds really familiar, termination of life. So it's something that I very much look forward to having this key part of pro-life work. And yes, it is pro-life work. This key part of the defense of life that we, you know, at the beginning of the show where we say we're here to be laser focused on all things that have to do with defending the dignity, the right to life and human rights and human life. So it's one of those things that we should have it as part of our arsenal in this whole calling to defend life at every stage and phase of development, but most times we don't really include it.
We don't talk about it.
We don't talk much about it, but it as an equipped pro-life person, as an equipped defender of human dignity, human rights, and human life at every stage and phase of development, I think that this is one thing that we must make a part of our, you know, a part of our knowledge. You know, it's a whole knowledge gap that we need to close. So if you're going to be defending human life at every stage and phase of development, you must know, you should know at least what this whole euthanasia and assisted suicide thing is and how it is raging through the world from country to country.
That's right. And I mean, it's my reality here in Canada because it's been legalized. And like you said, it's this wave, tidal wave sweeping across the world. And to tell us more about that, and for all of you listeners out there to learn about, in a way, the apologetics about surrounding euthanasia. What is it? Why is this being pushed? Where is this being legalized? We have our wonderful guest, Alex Schadenberg, with us today. He's the co-founder and executive director of the Euthanasia Prevention Coalition, which is a Canadian organization. I had to mention that. It's been founded in 1988, and it's based out of Ontario, where Alex lives. In addition to all the wonderful advocacy work that he's been doing for over 20 years, he's also produced The Euthanasia Deception, which is a documentary that explores the 15 years of euthanasia legalization in Belgium. And he's traveled the world. He's traveling the world all the time, trying to warn people about the euthanasia regime that we have here in Canada. So we are so happy to have him with us today. Alex Schadenberg, it is so good to have you here with us today on the Focused on Life podcast.
Yeah, I'm glad to be with you, and especially with Uchu.
Thanks, Alex.
So Alex, you've been the leading expert on euthanasia for many years, and the leading expert in opposing euthanasia, not the leading expert for euthanasia. And you've been traveling around the world. You're obviously stationed in Canada, and man, oh man, it's been a roller coaster for you, probably, as someone who's been lobbying and educating and raising awareness about this issue in Canada and around the world. But for those who maybe don't know too much about the Euthanasia Prevention Coalition, or you, Alex Schadenberg, and the work you do, tell us, how did this whole thing start? What got you involved on this particular issue? And then we'll take it from there.
Well, Matt, I've been involved in this issue for a very long time. I started this work. Euthanasia Prevention Coalition was founded in 1998.
Wow.
And I was the founding executive director. At the time, I had another job, so I was doing this just on the side to get it rolling. But in 1999, I started doing this full time. So I've got 25 years of, almost 25 years, that is, of actually being working full time on this issue. And what got me into this issue in particular is the fact that two things. We have we had a son who's autistic, and we were getting involved in the whole issue around autism and people with disabilities in the community, because we have a young son. We're looking for services and things like that to help him certainly adjust and things like that. And you get a totally different perspective on the issue of euthanasia when you looking at it from the disability perspective. And this is what really hit home with me, because in the late 90s, we had, first of all, in the early 90s, we had the case of Sue Rodriguez in Canada. Sue had ALS, and she went to the Lou Gehrig's disease, and she went to the Supreme Court of Canada asking that the law be overturned, that they allow her to die by euthanasia. And in fact, the Supreme Court, in a 5-4 decision, which was quite close, said no. But in the end, she died by lethal drugs. We don't exactly know which doctor was involved in it, but we do know that Sven Robinson, who was an MP at the time, was by her side when this happened. And so we get this whole sort of idea that there's some sort of something good about euthanasia, but a lot of people haven't really looked at this. But Robert Latimer killed his daughter Tracy in October of 1993. And if you consider the Supreme Court decision and the timing of that, and then the Robert Latimer, was only a few weeks afterwards where he actually killed his daughter Tracy. You see the effect of the discussion around euthanasia in the media, leading Robert to think that the best thing he could do was kill his daughter with cerebral palsy. And he did so. And of course, that went to the courts. And what really got me into this issue was actually the Robert Latimer issue, because there was a poll done in 1997. So there was two Latimer trials. I'm not going to get into that. That's all Canadiana history. We don't have to talk about. But nonetheless, during the second trial, there was this poll, and 32% of Canadians thought that what Robert Latimer did was fine. He was just a loving father, and he felt he had no choice, and he made the right decision. And to me, it was like, wait a second here, that's a very heavy eugenic number. Eugenics mean that there's a group of people who think that somebody else's life is not worth living. And there weren't many voices against euthanasia in Canada, so that's what made me turn heavily towards this issue.
Wow. Thanks a lot, Alex, for, first of all, the great work you've done over the years. I think I had the great opportunity of meeting you back in 2016, and it still amazes me to watch your activities online and follow up on some of the things that you do. And you know, we are following you on social media. This issue of euthanasia is something that a lot of people, a lot of us, and I think I speak for so many when I say many day-to-day people do not think it's an issue that is close to them. The issue of assisted suicide.
Right.
Yes, we talk a lot here on this podcast, Focused on Life, and in other forums about things like abortion, you know, and various other issues where people will think, oh, we encounter that daily and all of that, and that's close to us. But euthanasia is something that many people think, oh, it's far from me, you know, something they do in Belgium or the Netherlands, or, you know, it's end of life issue. It does not concern me. But You will probably know, and I would like you to expand on this, the fact that euthanasia or assisted suicide or termination of life on demand, as they call it in some countries, is now an issue, a real issue that is so close to many of us without us still knowing to this point.
Well, the key is I think we should first talk about what euthanasia and assisted suicide actually are, because a lot of people get these things
Exactly.
confused.
Yeah.
There is some overture at the issue with the issues of medical treatment questions and things like that, but they're a little bit different. Because in the case of euthanasia is when a doctor or a nurse, because in Canada it can be doctors or nurses doing it, they actually give you the lethal injection, the lethal drugs, or they'll do it by an IV. But the point of it is it's an act of homicide. They're intentionally causing your death. I mean, if you're saying I just call this murder, and you're saying that's maybe a bit harsh, Alex. Actually, it's a very accurate statement, considering that how we legalize euthanasia in Canada is by creating an exception in the criminal code to homicide. So even the criminal code recognizes that it's a homicide, but it's an exception because a doctor, nurse, two of them have approved it, and with the two approvals, you can go ahead and kill somebody. And that's exactly how the law is actually written. Assisted suicide is very similar. Now, Canada legalized both euthanasia and assisted suicide, but assisted suicide is more of an issue in the U.S. In the U.S., they have 10 states that have legalized assisted suicide. Assisted suicide is very similar, but in this case, the doctor would prescribe the lethal drugs. And so the difference is not in the drugs. It's a very similar drug mixture. The difference is not in the outcome. The outcome is your death. And the difference is not in the intention. The intention is to cause death. The difference is how it's carried out. So with euthanasia, the doctor or nurse actually, they then do the act. So it's an exception to homicide. It's murder. In the case of assisted suicide, the doctor is then prescribing it. You have to take it yourself, right? So you can see the differences in how it's done, not so much in the intention and the outcome, et cetera. The drugs are very similar, et cetera, as you get what I'm saying. So euthanasia, then it should be very concerning, because when you legalize this, what you're actually saying, whether it's the Netherlands, Belgium, or Canada, what they're actually saying in law is that these doctors and nurses, they have the right in law to cause your death. These laws are, they say it's all about my body, my choice, freedom, but really what it's about is the rules that the doctor must follow to kill you, and it is about killing you. And you can't divorce the issue of the person who's killing you and their intention and why from the actual killing of the person. So, a lot of people call this about choice and autonomy, but that's a lie. But I'll get into that more, because the greater question to me is, why do people actually ask for this? That's
That
the
is true. Yeah. Why?
Well, that's Alex, you often hear, at least in Canada, we hear this all the time from all the euthanasia lobbyists, but you see this happening all around the world with all these activists. It's not really about killing someone. It's about ending their suffering, isn't it? It's like the most compassionate thing one can do. So obviously, I know that's wrong. And that's the talking points they use, because they like to, it's all about language. You like to redefine things. They like to make things sound nice and colorful. But so let's maybe get into a little bit of apologetics here on this particular issue. Why is this not just about ending suffering, but it's actually about killing someone?
Yeah, in fact, I usually don't want to talk about suffering, because, as human beings, we all fear suffering. Whether, we're supposed to accept our suffering or not, or whatever. These are all whatever religious issues, connotations, theology. But the fact of it is that humans, we don't want to suffer. None of us want to suffer. Nonetheless, that's how it's sold to us. It's sold to us that we're going to be ending suffering. It's the flag they wave, the euthanasia lobby, and they tell the stories. And their argument is actually quite easy. They just trot out story after story of someone who's going through a very difficult health condition, and they make somebody in fear so much so that they think that maybe a little bit of homicide's okay. The problem is, you can never in law give someone the right in law to kill you. You have to think of how foolish this actually is. It's actually pretty crazy. If you think about it, if you read the Canadian law, or if you look at the Dutch law, and you actually think about it and say, you mean we've given a doctor or a nurse the right in law to kill you. And if you actually read the legislation, you realize that's exactly what it says. They have the right in law to kill you. And in fact, when they approve it, they will go ahead and kill you. That's what it's about. So you've given this power, and it is a power to someone to cause your death. And then we assume, oh, well, there won't be any problems with this. Well, first of all, the concept of someone else killing you should be right off the bat wrong. But in the reality, The whole sales approach is a lie. This is about what I call the big lie. So it's like what happens in all these cultures where they're trying to sell you something. They say it over and over and over and over again, the same big lie. And of course, people buy into it. One of the reasons Canada has gone crazy with euthanasia is because 2014, 2015, 2016, as we were debating the issue, we watched story after story after story of people who were having difficult health conditions and approaching death, and euthanasia was sold to us as the answer. You see, so what that does is it broke down our feelings of maybe that's not such a bad idea. It made us feel that way. But in reality, I've dealt with a lot of people who've been approved for euthanasia. I've dealt with a lot of people who have family members who are approved for euthanasia. Euthanasia Prevention Coalition, we work with something called Compassionate Community Care, and we have a helpline. And we've dealt with a lot of people. I mean, incredible numbers. And every single time it comes down to the same thing. These people are not asking for euthanasia because of suffering. Now they might be actually fearing suffering. Now, I should actually make a statement. I'm not saying actually nobody suffers, because let's be brutally honest, there are some conditions that are very
Of
horrific. So we do
course,
know that. That's
of
called part of the
course.
human reality. I do know
Yeah.
that, and that's I'm not questioning it, and I've spoken to people who are going through significant issues, and I'm gonna actually get into that with you in a second. But when you actually ask them, why are you asking for euthanasia? Because that's the fundamental question. They always say the same thing. I'm alone. I'm lonely.
Yeah.
No one comes to see me. I feel my life has no meaning. My life has no purpose. My life has no value. I don't see any reason to continue living. I feel hopeless. I feel hopeless. Well, these are not new human emotions or feelings. This is actually common to the human person. These are all feelings around, suicidal ideation, feelings of hopelessness. These are not new. Like, people going through a difficult health condition have always felt these sort of feelings. The difference is once you legalize euthanasia, you can be killed for expressing it
Yeah.
rather than cared
Wow.
for when you express it. So let me get into another thing. I got a call from this guy from Kelowna, BC, and it was on the helpline. I answered the helpline at that time, and I was talking to him. And he has some significant health problems. It was absolutely correct. He was going through quite a few things. And when someone's calling, you always spend a lot of time listening. You give them time to talk, whether you've got time or not. That's just what you do. And so
Sure.
he was describing all his different health problems, et cetera. And my heart went out to him. But at the end of that conversation, I said to him, but why do you want the doctor to kill you? Because that's what you're actually asking him to do. And he said, because I'm alone and I've got no one in my life.
Yeah.
Why would I continue living? So here's the point. Yes, there's fear of future suffering as a prominent issue. There's this feeling I'm a burden on others. But this whole issue of this uncontrolled suffering that we were sold as the reason for legalizing this is almost never the reason. That's such a, when you look at the reasons why people are asking for this, it's so low in the list. I'm not saying it never happens, but I mean, really, this is about a human reality of people being alone, lonely, suicidal ideation feelings, feeling of hopelessness. These are people who need help, not death. This is not about freedom and autonomy. This is about abandoning people at their time of need. This is about abandonment, social and cultural abandonment. And this is
Yeah.
what euthanasia is actually about, because we kill them to deal with their social needs.
Wow. Alex, let me just stop you there. You said you started this work around 1998, 99, you went full time. But even I know that at that point, medically assisted in assistance in dying or what have you made and euthanasia and all whatnot had not been legalized in Canada. Can
No.
you tell us what happened? I know
Yeah.
sometime around 2016, 2017, these then came into your country,
Right.
became legalized through whatever means it was. But tell us the journey and what happened and how it's become a real issue now in Canada. And from year to year, what we continue to see, the alarming figures we continue to see as this particular trend is now quickly becoming almost a full culture on its own.
Right. So in Canada, we actually faced quite a few euthanasia bills in 2005, 2007. There was another one in 2009, always brought in to Parliament by the Bloc Québécois. And the bill in 2009 went to a full vote. and it was defeated by 228 to 59. So this was a bill by Francine Lalande. So we were very successful in opposing euthanasia in Parliament. We, I spent a lot of time meeting with members of Parliament, and I can go through long stories about all of that because actually it really does open your eyes as to how Parliament actually works. I will make one comment. Often talking to members of Parliament, they had never read the bill. So I'd have a meeting, and they knew that this bill was going there, knew they were going to have to vote on it and everything. So they would say, "Yes, so yeah, I'll come, I'll meet with you." So I'd have a meeting with them. It could be a liberal, could be an NDP, it could be a conservative. And I always tried to meet with people I did not know their position, because if I knew their position, if I knew they were against or in favor, then I'm thinking, well, why would I bother meeting with you? I
Yeah,
tried to
no
meet with those
hope.
people who I didn't know their position,
Yeah.
but most often they had never read the legislation.
That's
And I would
it.
sit down with them and I'd go through it with them. I'd have the bill with me and I would talk to them about this is what this bill says. And then at the end of the conversation, they would always say, oh, well, I'll be voting against that.
That's
And
it.
even the same thing when we legalized Bill C-14 in Canada in 2016. So when we legalized euthanasia in 2016, I guarantee you that, first of all, that was a whipped vote. I guarantee you most of the members of Parliament who voted in favor had never read the bill. They might have voted, stood up and voted every time the party whip told them to stand up and vote against a resolution, because they tried to amend that bill right, left, and center,
Yeah.
section by section by section. There was, I don't know, 100 and some odd amendments to the bill that were proposed, and every single one of those amendments were defeated, I think, except for one or two, and they ended up being ignored anyway. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They never read the
Read the
bill.
bill. That's
Okay, but
it.
anyway, going
Yeah.
back to, so what happened in Canada is after we were successful in Parliament over and over again, the euthanasia lobby announced that they were going to go to the courts because they decided that they're not going to get this through in Parliament. They're going to go to the court. And
Yeah.
so then you had the Carter court case that was launched in British Columbia. I'm not going to go into all the particulars about it, but it did go to the Supreme Court of Canada. And in early 2015, the Supreme Court of Canada struck down our laws. And it was a unanimous decision, which is actually quite interesting. That had a lot, I think, to do with Beverley McLaughlin, who was our Chief Justice. It was her goal to get most of her decisions to be near unanimous. So I think what happened is there was horse trading that went on in order to get this unanimous decision. And I'm not going to get into that too far, but someday someone will write the book about it. Anyway, what's happened in Canada
Hopefully
is
you, Alex, you'll write a book about it maybe one day.
Maybe. And actually, the interesting thing about it is time keeps moving on. Even the Carter decision, someone should write a book about that because Justice Lynn Smith was the judge in that case. And there's a lot of issues with that whole question. She should have recused herself and she didn't, but let's not, we'll move on. What happened is when Canada legalized euthanasia in 2016 through Bill C-14, they had a type of a terminal illness restriction in it. It said that your natural death had to be reasonably foreseeable, but that was not defined. So the funny thing about it was, is even from the very beginning, the law was designed to expand because it was, if you looked at the original law, there were no definitions in the law. So what happens is if you don't define it, what happens is it expands by its practice. So obviously speaking, the euthanasia doctors were expanding it right from the beginning by its practice. So you get this very fast explosion of euthanasia deaths in Canada. But what I mean is that natural death being reasonably foreseeable line had no meaning, but it did hold back this euthanasia based on chronic illness, because there's a lot of people who have chronic conditions who may have wanted to be killed by lethal drugs, but they would not have qualified under the law because they did not fit under your natural death being reasonably foreseeable. Then there was a Quebec court case, and that the natural death being reasonably foreseeable was struck down. This was a lower court case in Quebec, so therefore technically it only applied to Quebec. It was not appealed. It should have obviously been a pre-appealed, because who's kidding who? The language of a decision have reverberations throughout other legal decisions. You don't have to be a lawyer
Yeah,
to understand
precedence.
how this
Yeah,
works
to
with
set
precedents, right?
precedence. Yeah.
That's exactly it. But anyway, then Parliament then said, "Oh, well, we're going to have to amend our laws." So then they amended it to they removed that your natural death had to be reasonably foreseeable, but they also added in euthanasia for mental illness alone. So that was part of Bill C-7. They added euthanasia for mental illness alone. And then, of course, that's been a whole what's gone on since. Now, when you remove Yeah, that your natural death had to be reasonably foreseeable. What was left in the law? This is the essential question. So what's left in the law is that you have to have an irremediable medical condition. What does it mean to have an irremediable medical
Irremediable, yeah.
condition? What it means is you have basically a chronic condition. So when the disability community was arguing in 2020, 2021 against Bill C-7, saying that this law specifically focuses in on us, they were correct. They were correct because, in fact, everyone with a disability has an irremediable medical condition. So all of them now
That is
qualify to be
true.
killed. So now we've gone through the roof with all this craziness in Canada. Now we've been having euthanasia for poverty, euthanasia for homelessness, euthanasia for an inability to get medical treatment, euthanasia for all these social reasons. And the reason is because a lot of people with disabilities in Canada live in abject poverty. They can't get work. They're homeless. A lot of them are homeless. They're going through very difficult situations. They're having hard times getting medical treatment. If you look at the medical system in Canada, it's really in trouble. So if you are an able-bodied person and you're having difficulty getting medical treatment, imagine what it'd be like if you're a person with a disability and you need to have some sort of specialist who has some expertise in your care and you're trying to get treatment. You often can't get treatment. You're on a long waiting list. So what happens? They say, I can't live like this anymore. And we're seeing all these stories. I can't live like this anymore. Guess what? Euthanasia has been sold to them as a freedom. Think about it. So you get all these euthanasia deaths for reasons that we never imagined we would get. And then, of course, what are we debating now? Euthanasia for mental illness, euthanasia for children, euthanasia by advance directive,
Keeps
euthanasia for people with
expanding.
Alzheimer's and dementia.
Ah,
You know, it's ridiculous. It's crazy. Now, I know I should take a breath, but I'm going to say one other thing. One of the reasons Canada went crazy was A, how they sold it in the first place, right? It was sold to Canadians. We were inundated. So, you know, it's that like the Chinese drip therapy where they're constantly drip, 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 drip. We had story after story after story. But secondly, we had another problem. The road was already paved. So if you have to pave a road, sometimes it takes longer to get there because you have to pave the road first. The road was already paved in the Netherlands and Belgium.
That is true.
So getting there was, we got there very fast in Canada. And the craziest thing of all is we were told in Canada, oh, this is, we were told this all the time in 2014, 2015, 2016, oh, well, we're not going to be like the Netherlands and Belgium. We're going to be different. Well, why would we be different? Are there different types of humans here? We got a lot of Dutch in Canada, you know. That's another point. A lot of the Dutch in Canada are actually good Dutch people because they emigrated before the Netherlands went crazy. But anyway, the
It's
fact
good
of
you're
it is,
talking about Netherlands, and because I think Matt had told me before that he wanted to ask you something about,
yeah, I'm gonna get into there in a second. But you know,
about
the road was
euthanasia
already paved. They
international,
were already doing these crazy euthanasia deaths in the Netherlands and Belgium. So getting there becomes quicker when the road has already been paved, and that's part of
That
what's
is
happened to
true.
Canada.
So true.
Alex, you know, just Uj, you mentioned that someone has to write a book. Well, why don't we just transcribe this whole conversation with Alex into a book? And there we have it. Alex, you'll take
Well,
50%,
actually,
we'll take 50%, and
I'm
everyone's
getting
happy.
the royalties, part of the royalties at least.
I'll work with Uchu any day of the week. But anyway, the fact of it is, yes, I should actually hire someone to transcribe because the fact of it is that writing a book takes a lot of time. And with my speaking schedule, I actually haven't had a lot of time. And it's actually starting to drive me a little bit crazy between speaking and running. There isn't a lot of time to live. And of course, I have to keep my wife happy too because she's the most important part of my life and my
Of
kids, of course,
course.
too. But
Of
anyway, what's happening around the
course.
world is important also because Canada's affected the world, and this is a sad reality. You see what's going on in Australia with euthanasia has really been affected by Canada. I was just also in Slovenia. Slovenia is a very small country in Europe. There's about 2 million Slovenians. Now, why do they bring Alex to Slovenia? I'm not a Slovenian. I don't speak Slovenian. Because the Slovenian parliament is talking about a Canadian-style euthanasia bill. So they brought me there to tell the stories. And when I'm telling the stories about what's going on in Canada, I'm very clear. These stories are not my stories. I did not write any of these stories. These stories come from the major media. And the only reason, like some of these media outlets are very pro-death. And yet they're publishing these stories because the stories are so compelling that, of course, it helps them sell newspapers. It helps them get media clicks because these are such compelling stories. It's hard to believe that this is happening. All these stories are real media stories. And this is what's going on in Canada. Like these people who are like, I'll tell you a story. For instance, the people with from the military, like it was shocking. You get someone with PTSD coming back who served our country in Afghanistan, is going through PTSD, and they're told you should consider euthanasia. Like, that's unbelievable. Now you'd say, okay, well, that's just a bad employee. That's a bad employee with our military. Could be, but they weren't the only case. They weren't the only case. Then you get the story of Christine Gauthier that of course Matt knows well and others know well. She's served in our military. She's become disabled. She became a wheelchair athlete. She's got all these awards from Special Olympics and everything from the as a wheelchair athlete. She needs a wheelchair lift. Now, is there anything absurd about that she needs a wheelchair lift? She's a veteran. She's asking Veterans Affairs with help for a wheelchair lift. Does that not seem like a normal thing to ask for? Is that not reasonable? And
It is.
she's told, well, Christina, if your life's that bad, you should be asking for euthanasia. That shows you a culture shift in our country of insanity. Not to say that the thing wasn't insane from the first place, but I mean, it's gone crazy. I wrote a pamphlet recently saying Canada's MAID law has gone mad because it's mad. But what's happening around the world is we're getting some copycat stuff now. So we're getting other countries wanting to copy Canada. Well, this is insanity. Why would you want to copy the insanity of Canada? Like that's crazy.
So
I'll be speaking. Yeah, go
Alex,
on.
sorry to jump in here now, but it seems like it's so bad in Canada, okay? And when you mentioned Slovenia, the parliament there, they're looking at implementing a Canadian style model for euthanasia and assisted suicide. Okay, so my question here though is when you're traveling to Slovenia, you said you're heading off to the UK in the next few weeks.
You've been to Ireland as well, I think, one
That's
time.
right. You've traveled.
Yeah, I've been to Germany recently, et cetera, all throughout the US. Absolutely.
You've traveled everywhere. And then when you share these stories with these different with parliaments from other countries and other politicians, what's their response to all this? Are they in shock or are they kind of like empowered by these stories because they really genuinely believe in this Canadian model, which is just a model of death? Like, what's their reaction? And then I guess a follow-up question to that would be is Canada the one pushing euthanasia, like the Canadian foreign policy, I guess, or is there some sort of other, I don't know, other stakeholder out there in the global world pushing this euthanasia? Who are the people behind this lobby?
Okay,
Good
so first
question.
comes the first. I was speaking at the UK House of Lords, and there was a member of the House of Lords there who was very pro euthanasia. She was on the other side, and she listened to me. She was respectful the whole thing, and that's good. No problem. But then she at the so at, there was a bunch of good questions, to me and whatever, and that was fine. And then she put her hand up. She said, "Well, that wouldn't happen here. We don't have the same." And she's gone on and on. And I stopped her and I said, "Well, wait a second here. In Canada, we were told that would never happen in Canada, what's happening today." That's exactly what we were told. We were told we would not be the same as the Netherlands and Belgium. In fact, the Quebec Minister of Health said in the Quebec legislature, we'd have about 100 a year. Well, Quebec just last year had 6.8% of all deaths that were euthanasia. Not 100. I'm not saying that 100 would have been acceptable. What I'm saying is it has gone insane. And she said, oh, that wouldn't happen here. I said, well, first of all, that's what they said in Canada. That was a lie. Secondly, I said, because exactly what's happening. Okay, we've gone worse than the Netherlands. We're worse than Belgium. And we were not going to follow their lead. Give me a break. I said, on top of it, we follow the same common law. Canada, UK, Australia, Scotland. We have the same common law. So I said, sadly, you will follow Canada. You will follow Canada. It will go that direction. And I understand your courts are a little different in the UK. I'm not arguing that, but we have the same. Once you've legalized it, here's the problem. Once you legalize killing, so okay, let me go back a sec. Before you legalize killing, you can argue about all these supposed safeguards, and people will say, well, you're right. We should be concerned about that. We should be careful. We should make sure that you're terminally ill. We'll stick in the law that your natural death has to be reasonably foreseeable. We'll stick in there that there has to be a 10-day waiting period. Okay, yeah, you're right. There should be a reflection period. We get that. And they do all these things thinking, yeah, that makes sense because, oh, yeah, we should be concerned about people being pressured or people being vulnerable and these kind of things. But once you legalize it, they become then forms of discrimination, forms of they are the they, these supposed safeguards. They are then the, how would you say, the blockages to
Yes,
equality of all people. So,
that's
for
right.
instance, what was argued in the Quebec court was that the natural death being reasonably foreseeable was unconstitutional because it denied people with chronic conditions who were not terminally ill, it denied them equality to access to medical aid in dying. That's what it denied them, equality.
So this
So
is
it was an
becoming,
equality argument.
Alex, so this is, they're using the human rights approach to this thing now. It's all
Absolutely.
about, this is a human right, just like abortion is a human right, just like all these other things are human rights.
Yeah.
They're using the human rights approach. And are you seeing this? Is this kind of their main methodology
Well,
in
that's what
other
they've been
parts of the
doing in
world?
Canada. Like in other parts of the world, they get the same effect. So let me, I should finish where I started, and that is once you legalize it, you've actually only crossed, there's only one line in the sand.
That's
And the one
right.
line in the sand is that I can either kill you or I can't kill you. If the law says I can't kill you, it doesn't matter about the rest of it. I can't kill you. But once you say I can kill you, now it's okay to kill you. The only question is who does the killing and for what reasons?
Yeah, and
That's where we're
when,
at in
why,
Canada.
how?
So,
Yeah.
everything else starts coming into play. So obviously it made sense when we were debating euthanasia that there'd be an 18-year-old, restriction. You have to be
Threshold,
an
yeah,
adult. You've got to be an
yeah.
adult. You got to be, they said you have to be a competent adult capable of consenting. Guess what? It's
They,
discrimination now
yeah,
because, oh, well, what
exactly.
about a 16-year-old? Well, what about
Yeah.
a 15-year-old? What about that 9-year-old? That's exactly what's argued. Is it not a form of discrimination? And the answer is, well, yes, it is a form of discrimination. Well, then that form of discrimination needs to be eliminated. And that's what we're seeing. And that's what we're seeing everywhere. In the world, they have to hear these stories because they have to understand. They think you can have a little bit of killing. That's what they're being told. And because they haven't legalized it yet, they're thinking, well, there are some pretty bad cases out there. I wouldn't want to suffer like that. Well, okay, they don't need to suffer like that. We can properly care for them. But the point of it is for that very difficult case, they're thinking, well, maybe we can have a little bit of killing. But you can't have a little bit of killing because then it becomes a situation of, well, what about the next case? And the
That's
next
right.
case? And the next
But
case? And
I'm
the next
very
case?
interested, Alex, in what Matt had just asked. So, who's pushing this? Who's pushing this around the world? What do you see any trends or any commonalities as to what is behind, who is behind it as it's going? It seems to be this wind, this destructive wind going from country to country.
So because I only talk about euthanasia and assisted suicide, I'm not going to get into all the other issues, but I will say that there's a big euthanasia lobby worldwide, and they are well funded by the same people that you already know. There's the whole,
Okay.
so there's this whole euthanasia lobby who are what you say, they believe they, so first of all, they're very anti against religious institutions. They believe that that's got to be totally done away with anything having to do with traditional morality or anything like that. So what they'll do is they'll equate that I can't kill you with traditional morality, where in fact I can't kill you. It's just a really good idea. Like it's a good idea that I can't kill you, and I shouldn't be allowed to kill you. And I don't believe in killing people. Sometimes we actually make our arguments too difficult. Sometimes it's good just to say, I'm opposed to killing people,
That's
but
right.
because no matter what you have to say, you can understand that argument. Anyway, so we go back to it. So there is the George Soros people who are into this whole population issue and the rest of it. The problem is that you have these radical extremists who are running the death lobby, and then you have the average person. And the problem with this issue is the average person is like any human being. We are all moved by emotion. We're moved by
Yeah.
fear. Fear is actually the big thing that we're moved by as human beings.
Yeah.
And guess what? They just keep hammering down on the suffering thing. Well, you can deal with suffering properly. You don't need to be suffering like that. There's no reason for it. We can properly care for you, but they don't want you to think that way. They want you to think that there's two choices. Either you're going to suffer or we can kill you. Those are your two choices. And people say, well, I'll take a little bit of the killing.
Yeah.
Well, you can't have a little bit of killing because guess what? If you can have a little bit of killing, there'll be a lot more killing because you can't justify a little bit of killing. It's not right. Prime example, it's not right that I can die by euthanasia and Ujo can't. It's not
That's
right.
right.
It doesn't make any sense. And once you legalize it, you can't justify the quote quote safeguard in the law or the restriction in the law. That restriction is discrimination, and that's exactly how it's been sold, and that's exactly what's going on. So I could say that there are many issues in the world that are lobby issues that certain people have been big on, and many of those issues have been solved, meaning that the other side has sort of overturned. I mean, I'm not saying nothing's done with, but you know what I'm getting with. But euthanasia is the big one right now for them. They are pushing death everywhere. That's the big
So
issue.
there is a lobby. There's
Oh,
definitely
well, there
a
is, yeah, and
lobby,
it's
a
quite
euthanasia
organized,
lobby,
and
and
it's
it's funded. It's organized and it's well funded for some
very
reason.
well funded. Yes, I wish actually there were some pro-life billionaires who had the same sort of commitment.
That's
So
very
Alex,
restful.
we Uju and I, we often on fo Focus on Life, we've been talking about population control as it relates to abortion and sterilization and everything that's happening at the United Nations in regards to population control. It is clearly abortion and, you know, mass contraception. It is one of the tools. The people who think that the world is overpopulated, therefore we need less people. It's very clear. It's very obvious they're doing that in the name of population control. And of course, they end up always targeting the poorest of the poor, the most marginalized.
Right, that's exactly it,
I
yes.
have not, I haven't seen yet this conversation about euthanasia framed as a population control thing. Is that the
As
case?
targeting the
Is that the
weakest.
case? Well,
Yeah.
what they've been doing is they've been selling it as freedom. So they're all busy saying, well, if we can sell it as freedom, it'll accomplish the same goal. But the whole concept of freedom is the big lie that you hear over and over again. Now, why do I call it the big lie? Because it's not about freedom. It's not about choice. It's not about autonomy. It is about killing. When someone puts lethal poison in your bloodstream, when did that become about your freedom? You might have asked for it, but guess what? You might have also been going through a terrible, terrible depression, which is not uncommon. The difference is when you've legalized euthanasia and you're asking to be killed, that becomes the request for death rather than the request for help, and you get killed. And that's what the outcome of all this becomes. And it's very important that we recognize the reality. That's why I said the biggest issue is, why do people ask for this? The other side wants you to think this is all about people who are suffering and nearing death, and isn't this horrific? And you're a horrific people, they'll say to me. You're a horrific person because you're denying me my right to die. And I'm thinking, I'm not denying you your right to die. Actually, I want you to have proper care. Okay, I don't want you to be killed by some autocrat who thinks it's wonderful to kill you, or some doctor in British Columbia who does tons of killings all the time, who thinks it's a wonderful thing and is getting paid to kill you. These are hit people. They're going to kill you. They have a philosophy of death, and they think every death is a good death. So it's insanity. Anyway, the other thing you need to know is about the data, because we see a lot of the data, and I think you should know. In the US, where it's assisted suicide has been legal, all the data in every state shows the same thing. Who's dying by
So in the
assisted
US is
suicide?
by state, yes? What
Yeah, and they have
states
10 states.
are that already have
Oh, now you
euthanasia?
asked me to remember perfectly, and I'm going to
No,
fail. I'm going
but
to miss one.
seriously, I
But, you know,
didn't know. I just
it's
thought it was
basically
like
the left states. So you've
Oregon.
got California, Oregon, Washington State, you've got Vermont. You've got New Jersey, Hawaii. I'm actually doing pretty good right now. But you know, you've got 10 states,
Oh, that
and
already have euthanasia. I did not see. I did
well,
not know.
assisted suicide. But the data shows that it's always the white, the worried, and the wealthy who are asking for assisted suicide. Look at the data from California. California, 35% of the California population is white. 89% of the assisted suicides in California were white people. You know, it's that people who demand, it's my freedom, it's my choice, but it's actually more than that. It's actually people who have the, how would you say, the audacity to believe that the world rolls around them and they're not thinking about the other person. Now, what's happening in Canada has shifted a lot because we removed that terminal illness requirement. So then you have the reality that there's a lot of people with disabilities in Canada, and they are in pretty rough shape. I mean, they do not have equality. They get a disability pension that makes, and with the cost of rent today, they don't have enough money to pay the rent on their apartment. Now, you can get subsidized housing, but guess what? There's long lineups for subsidized housing. So you'd say to yourself, well, I don't. If I lose my subsidized housing apartment, where can I move? You can move nowhere. You can't afford it. It's not possible. You can't afford to eat. You can't afford to live. They're dying by assisted suicide and euthanasia in my country. And that's crazy. That's insanity.
Alex, so we've been talking about Canada, and then there's these 10 states in America. We mentioned Holland, Netherlands, Australia, the UK. It seems like this is a problem that is affecting mainly the kind of the UN term is like the global north, you know, the countries, the developed countries. Is this an issue at all for the rest of the world? The people who are just trying to get by, live, make good money, raise their families.
Third world countries, developing
That's right. Is
countries.
it, or is this
Okay, in
lobby?
South America, we've had some problem because you've had some court
Wow.
decisions. You had the court decision in Colombia, which legalized euthanasia. And there was another one in just a few months ago. Now I can't remember, which is very bad. You know, when we've done this, I'll say, oh yeah, there was that country. But anyway, I mean, you're getting this this push now in South America that is going through the courts because, of course, those legislators are not voting for this. So this is the kind of thing we're facing. And most countries, though, they've been rejecting it. Even in the U.S., if you look at it, in the U.S. last year, in the last 2 years, actually, they had lots of push to legalize assisted suicide in quite a few states. And they failed in every state to legalize assisted suicide 2 years in a row. This year, they're pushing 20 states again, and they have bills in 20 states in the US this year.
Wow.
And they haven't been successful yet in any of those states. But, you know, the year is far from being over. The only good thing I can say this year is it's a shorter year because it's an election year. So the legislative cycles close earlier. And obviously speaking, we're already now March. I don't know if you're going to be listening to this in May. This was recorded in March of 2024, so I'm saying now we're in March and nothing's happened yet.
We'll be putting this online. It's gonna be hot off the press like by tomorrow, Alex. Don't you worry.
That's great. But what I'm saying is someone might be coming to it later. But we also have had big pushes now in Europe and other countries. So Spain's now legalized. Portugal, it passed in their parliament, it passed in their Senate, etc., but their president has refused to sign it.
Very good.
So this has been going back and forth. So in Germany, they had a court decision. Italy had a court decision. So technically, assisted suicide is legal in Germany, but the German parliament has refused so far to actually legalize it. So I don't know exactly how many deaths are going on in Germany. I would say it's
New
probably only a
Zealand
few.
as well. New
New Zealand
Zealand, I
legalized
saw.
euthanasia, yes. Well, they've been following the lead of Australia. Now, the nice thing about New Zealand is the crazy prime minister they had left. So, you know,
That's right.
they don't have the Trudeau problem that we have because she's gone. But I
Yeah,
mean,
but she was all in support of this bill that came a couple of years. That was like during COVID, I think it was as well.
No, she was a very big supporter of euthanasia. So I'm saying
So,
she's gone, so that's good. But I mean, there's been a big push in most of, as Matt would say, the wealthier nations, that's for sure. There's a lot of countries that will never legalize this, including
but South
Russia.
Africa, though, South Africa talked about has
Yeah,
been talking about
that's right.
legalizing euthanasia, and they have brought it up in public discussions and public
Yep.
debates,
And they've had court
so,
cases. Yes.
and they have court cases as well. So, but that thing that you referred to, like, white liberals, I think that that might be part of South Africa's problem, is the fact that there is a very wealthy slice of that particular society that is still highly westernized, but I think they are the loudest on the African continent when it comes to assisted suicide or euthanasia or anything along
Well, South
those
Africa
lines.
has the other factor. They have the guy who came from New Zealand who ended up killing his mother, who lost his medical license in New Zealand. He ended up going to South Africa and he did some killings there too. And he's heavily involved with the World Federation of Right to Die Society. So you get this influence of a killer who has killed people, and then these stories hit the news. And he claims that these were things they did on their own. He only advised them and things like that. So you get these stories. And once you start getting these stories bubbling up in the system, of course, that makes it more politically viable to talk about it, et cetera. And
That's
that's what
right.
South Africa's also had. Basically, the thing of it is Canada has become now the story of the world that, you know, if you're actually thinking about legalizing euthanasia, you better look at Canada and realize that we are the end result, and we're not even done with it yet. You know, they're talking about, as I say, euthanasia for children, euthanasia for people with dementia, people with Alzheimer's. You know, what's coming at us now is the big argument that it's horrific that we're allowing somebody with dementia to have to live. You know, we're being
Wow.
so uncaring and unkind because we're not willing to kill them. This is the argument we're hearing now. Okay.
Yeah.
On top of it, there's the other thing with the organ donation that's gone on. Okay. So, you know, we're doing organ donation after euthanasia. Well, if you read the ethics journals now, the big issue is euthanasia by organ donation. So why would you kill the person first? Why don't you just start taking out the organs? Obviously, it's the same effect. Taking out a healthy heart out of somebody, obviously that person doesn't have a heart anymore.
Yeah, and they
If they,
die.
you know, you might get the liver and the kidney and the rest of it and a bunch of stuff. You can just take them all out. Why give them lethal drugs first? Why do that?
That is
You
just
know?
absolutely, that is absolutely nuts. It's like a story from a horror movie.
Yeah, you can't make this stuff up, Matt, though.
You
And the other
can't
thing,
like
no.
organ harvesting. Like when you think of organ harvesting, you think of like the most like underground black market gang kind of like horrific,
Yeah.
criminal activity. Okay, when you think of that.
Yeah.
And then the idea that you're seeing into very smart people,
Yeah.
very, accomplished experts and doctors, even proposing the idea that, you know what, instead of just killing them by euthanasia, why don't we actually just grab their organs first and then they'll die anyways that way, because that's what they wanted in the first place. And then, we can save lives with these new organs. Like, that is so twisted. And I'm
I'm just
just
saying part of where it
crazy.
comes from, Matt, is the fact that how they do euthanasia, the drugs they give you for euthanasia destroy the lungs and the
Destroys,
heart,
yeah, it
right?
destroys the
So
organs.
what they actually do is it causes the lungs to stop moving, so your lungs fill with fluid. You actually euthanasia death is a di death of asphyxiation. You die of your
Oh my
lungs
goodness.
filling with fluid, and then the heart stops beating. But you see, the problem is that if you kill someone by euthanasia, you can't use the lungs and you can't use the heart.
That's
So it
right.
stops making sense. Because so let's say someone needs a heart, and so-and-so here has a perfectly healthy heart, and he wants euthanasia.
And many
Well,
times they do. All
why
these
don't you take the
people who
heart?
get euthanasia, many times they have like, a lot of healthy organs. And
Absolutely, especially
oh,
the ones
this
with
is
disabilities. Let's be brutally
crazy.
honest. These people with disabilities who have chronic conditions often have
Yes.
very healthy organs. There's nothing wrong with their organs at
Oh
all.
yeah.
The
Oh
difference is
yeah.
that we've made their life to be that they feel they're better off dead. And so now we're killing them. We're agreeing with them. Here's the big thing. Euthanasia is really about abandonment. It's about despair. It's about abandoning people to death. This is what it's about. They sell it as freedom, choice, and autonomy, but that's the big lie. And you know, there's been lots of times in history where we have the big lie. And later on, and you know, after you examine this 50 years later, you start realizing that was pretty insidious to
Yes.
have been selling the big lie to the culture so they can get involved with killing people, such as the killing of the Jews that went on and things like that. That was all about the big lie too, you know, different type of a big lie, but same concept. Okay. Well, here we go. The reality is a lot of people, we're all human. We're all human. We all go through difficult times. We all
That's
go through
right.
difficult health conditions. So if I'm going through a difficult health condition, it's totally normal for me to feel that my life, they question my meaning, my purpose, my value. You know, this is not new. People going through suicidal ideation is not new. The difference is now we kill you for it because you've expressed, I don't want to be alive anymore. Well, there's lots of reasons you might not want to be alive. There's lots of reasons you might not want to be alive at that moment, but that doesn't mean we should be killing you. There's a
That's
lot of people
right.
in Canada also with the medical treatment question. And I'm going to get to this very quick to close this off. We had that story in British Columbia of the woman who went to the US for medical treatment because she couldn't get treatment for her cancer in British Columbia. So she went, she ended up getting her treatment in the US. She went to full remission, she got better. And there's all these, there was this beautiful newspaper article about her showing a picture of her because she got married after she got better, pictures of her honeymoon in Hawaii and things like that. And what was she actually asking for? She was asking for the British Columbia government to pay for the cancer treatment because they refused to provide her treatment. Now,
I
when that
mean,
story came out,
yeah.
you had an explosion of other stories. People who had treatable medical conditions who died by euthanasia because they were put in the queue.
Yeah.
They were told,
Same
you can have
situation.
cancer treatment, your cancer's treatable. It's not like, oh, you're so far gone, I'm sorry, you know. It wasn't that. You've got treatable cancer, you've got treatable condition, but you're put into the queue because there's a waiting line for everything. And then 10 weeks later, you're told, oh, I'm sorry, you know,
Too
there's no use
late.
now.
It's
Yeah,
we
your
are
cancer
we spread.
spread.
essentially, we are, as a culture, or at least the euthanasia regime that's been sweeping through across Canada and the States and in Europe, essentially, it's a culture of death. We talk about the culture of death when it comes to abortion. It seems like it's, Alex, listening to you today, and I've heard you speak many times, and you're awesome at what you do, and I hope more countries invite you to warn them of what's happening in Canada so they don't duplicate it in their own country. But the thing here is that people, we need to overcome this culture of death with a culture of life. It's what it's the same thing we talk about when it comes to abortion, right? It's a culture of death. It's the same, it seems like it's the same arguments that they're using for euthanasia is what they used to normalize abortion. So as we wrap things up, because I know you got to go, what can we as individuals, people listening to this podcast today, they've learned a lot about euthanasia and assisted suicide. What can we do in our own communities right now with the people around us, with their family members who may be struggling, who may be sick, who may be suffering, who may not be sick at all? They might just, they haven't received a call from us in over a year. What should we be doing?
Well, as of this moment in Canada, euthanasia is legal. So when I'm giving talks, I talk about the importance of caring for our own. You can't assume that the person who goes to church with you or the person who lives down the street from you is not going to be dying by euthanasia. You can never assume that. But if you have a relationship with that person, you actually care about them, you actually reach out to them when they're going through their difficult time, you actually might be that person who can convince them that life is worth living. We get a lot of phone calls. We've got the Compassionate Community Care Ministry. So that's info at being with Euthanasia Prevention Coalition. It's epcc.ca. I have also the largest blog in the world on these issues. So if you want to be informed, you go to the Alex Shadenberg blog, or you go to the Euthanasia Prevention Coalition website and you click on our blog and you go to it. You'll see there's well over 5,400 articles. I've been publishing articles since 2007. There's nothing like that in the world that exists like that. All the articles have original links to it. But getting back to it, you need to be that caring person in your community, amongst the friends of yours, etc. We're all called to do this to care for our own. We should be more organized this way too. And I say this out of the reality that if you're a person of faith, it wasn't that long ago that your faith community would have been very oriented towards visiting and being with those people who are struggling within their own community. And I'm not saying it's completely gone, but I'm saying is in many communities, it's nearly gone.
That's
Okay.
right.
And I'm not actually indicting anybody or attacking anybody. What I'm saying is the culture shifted on us. The culture became very secular humanist, very individualistic. And in that culture, we also changed. So people who are people of faith, they also changed. The culture changed them. So what was normal 50 years ago is not normal today. Today, it's almost abnormal to go visit someone at the nursing home who you know, or to go visit your neighbor who's a shut-in. It's almost abnormal to do that. But you must do that if you want to build a culture of life and a culture that cares. We believe in replacing the culture of death with one that cares, caring about somebody else. And the other thing is it has to be about the other person. We do this not for the sake of me being happy, because I might provide some happiness if I'm visiting you, etc. But the point of it is it's about you having a need, and that's why I'm doing it. I recognize the importance of the interconnectedness of the person. You see, this radical individualism is a lie. It's another big lie. It's a big lie because we all want to have our freedom. We all want to have our choice. So we all want our autonomy. But guess what? We don't thrive that way. That's not how we're made to be.
That's
Whether you're
true.
religious or not, it doesn't matter. You're a human being. You're not made to be a radical individualist. You're made to be an interconnected and interdependent being. That's how you are.
Yes,
That's how you thrive.
radical.
You enjoy your friends. You enjoy your family. That's what makes you happy. Loneliness does not make you happy. It doesn't work that way. And this is what we have. We have a culture of loneliness. And in that culture of loneliness, the breeding of euthanasia worked very well.
That's
Because there's a lot of
right.
people who seem to have nobody who cares about them. And if you question me about the culture of loneliness, go ride a bus. Take a look around you. Just take a look. A lot of people, they
People are
sadly,
lonely.
they don't have a lot of love in their life. And it's sad,
Alex,
but we need to change that.
Alex, thank you so much. Like, we are so grateful for your work, your advocacy, and the fact that you have taken up this this particular domain where there was almost near dead silence, and no pun intended, just almost dead silence. And then we heard your voice, and we are still hearing your voice reverberated. And thank goodness, because now this seems to be a very strong storm going from country to country. And right behind it, there you are, Alex, going to Slovenia and Ireland and the UK and everywhere else, trying to fight this, with your own knowledge, with, as you say, techniques like making the politicians read the bill, making them understand, getting them to see the cautionary tale that is the nightmare that is unfolding in Canada. So we're so grateful to you, Alex, and we want people to know more about your work. So just tell us the website where people can find you, the your platforms on social media, because I just want people to follow more closely what you are doing, because euthanasia is closer to all of us than we know.
As I said, Euthanasia Prevention Coalition is easy to find because you just have to type it into your Google link. I don't know if I used the word Google, but you'll see it comes up.
Yeah, your
Okay.
search engine.
Your search engine, it comes up. But coming to the Euthanasia Prevention Coalition, as I say, go to the blog, start reading the articles, keep up to date. The other thing is go to the Compassionate Community Care site. Join the training sessions. We do visitor training sessions, advocacy training sessions now.
Good.
We're heavily involved in all of that. We've done some, I'll say we, but I'm just sort of the periphery of it now. But anyway, the fact of it is the studies on loneliness that have been published and things like that.
Very good.
It's absolutely the reality that we need to recognize the culture shift starts with the individual and
Yes.
it moves to the wider
The
community. That's how it
community,
is.
that's
That's what
right,
it's
yeah.
about. Now
True.
this blog of, I mean, this podcast will have at least 1 million listeners, so therefore it will have a great effect upon cultural shift. But there needs to be a lot more of this in order to be
More
in the long
people,
run
yeah, listening.
making that massive shift that's
Oh,
necessary.
thank you. Alex, we're also going to post in the show notes direct link. So if you cannot find it on your search engine, you just go to the show notes of this podcast and we will post everything you need to know about Alex and how people can also follow you on social media, because I do know that you are on social media because I'm connected to you and well, with you on social media. So thank you ever so much. We hope that your work would continue to yield more fruits. I think that you are a man who has been called at a time that is, you've just come to this very timely mission, I would say, if I can call it that. You came to it just before it started becoming legalized, or it started becoming a huge trend. And so you're right in the eye of the storm. Thank you so much, Alex. And we
Thank
hope
you so
that
much.
you get to write that book and then you get to come back on Focused on Life podcast and discuss
Well,
with us when
I have
hopefully
written a
when we
book
win more
before,
battles.
so I know how much work it takes. So anyway,
We're going to put show notes. We're going to put everything in the show notes. Everything about
very
your
good.
book,
Thank you
your
very
social
much.
media presence, and your website.
All
Thank
right.
you,
Well, thank
Alex.
you very much, Alex, for joining us today. Well, there you have it, folks. Alex Schadenberg, the leading expert in all things euthanasia and assisted suicide. Uju, I have listened to Alex speak so many times at different conferences, events, and he's a great speaker. And he is so passionate about this issue. Like, he knows the fine
That's
print.
obvious, I think,
He
Martin.
knows, yep. He knows the
I
fine print of
mean,
this
he
issue.
does. He knows this particular area very
And it's
well.
so good that we have someone like him on our team. Really, it is.
Well, I am very, very grateful, honestly, especially as we have talked about it through this hour just discussing with Alex. We just don't talk enough about this issue. We don't think a lot about this issue because we're thinking end of life. But just listening to everything he said now, it's about homelessness. It's about people not being able to access medical treatment on time. It's about people not feeling that their life is worthy or feeling that they're too much of a burden to their families. It's actually real, Matt. It's something close to each and every one of us. And if you think about it, many of the Western countries, from even what he said, they're already setting up paving the road, as he called it, paving the road. They're already setting up the foundations. They're already whispering about it or shouting about it or already debating about it. Some of them are voting on it. Some of them have voted on it and waiting for it to become law, if not for maybe one courageous politician, one courageous president, one courageous prime minister who is standing on it and preventing it. So euthanasia has really surprisingly taking over the world, and so the least we can do as defenders of life or as people who are speaking up for human life and human rights is to have the knowledge that this is how far this movement of death has reached, and to also do on our own part what we can. He did make a very mother kind of reference to it, but talked about rich pro-life people getting into it, people who have some money, who have some means, to know that there is already a death lobby, a euthanasia lobby, an assisted suicide lobby. If there is that, where are our people? Who will come and defend people's lives, people's dignities, people's sanctity of life from this, these kinds of well-funded lobby groups?
Yeah, and you know what? It's interesting. As we were speaking to Uju, one of the things that kind of really stood out for me is I felt like I was having deja vu, actually, because it's like everything he's saying, we saw with the push and promotion of abortion
That's
20,
true.
30, 40, 50 years ago,
That's
right?
right.
And now it's the same thing. First of all, they have to redefine it, they have to add colorful language because you can't
Yeah.
call it murder, you can't call it killing someone. You
Yeah.
have to call it, medical assistance in dying, and that's the term that they
Yes.
use here in Canada.
Yeah.
They call it, like you said at the beginning of the show, the termination of what
Of
was
life,
that
the
term
termination of
of
life on
life?
demand.
Like, what are these people doing? But and what I loved about what Alex mentioned is that this is the biggest lie. It's a huge lie.
It
So
is.
they're pushing this by lying to people. And if you live in a jurisdiction or a country where this is really not even on the table in your parliament or Congress or legislature, just know that it's coming. It's coming your way. And if there's
It
one
is.
thing that I learned today from Alex is that, and we talked about it, is that this isn't just limited to Canada or Belgium or the Netherlands or the States. This is a global push for
It is.
this, for the killing of people. And it's not just at the end of their life, but it's anyone who may be suffering with a mental illness,
Yeah.
minors. It's the slippery slope effect. It is real and it's
It
coming
is.
for you. So I don't know. I think it's a huge wake-up call. I think it's a
Yeah.
huge wake-up call for everyone listening today. Learn about Euthanasia Prevention Coalition, the organization that Alex runs. Learn
Yeah.
about this issue. Share this episode with others because he really
Yeah.
talked about the definitions. What is euthanasia? What is assisted suicide?
That's
How does
right.
that look like? How is it being pushed? And share this podcast with all your family and friends. And I think most importantly, I loved what Alex said at the end. This is about a culture of abandonment. So the antidote to that is pick up the phone and call your grandma. Pick up the
That's
phone.
right.
If you have an aunt or an uncle who's a shut-in, who lives alone, pick up the phone, call them, visit them, send them a postcard,
That's
make
right.
them know that, hey, we're thinking about you. We love you. You are loved and you are
Yes.
wanted and needed by us.
That's right. Wow, that much, you've said it all. So honestly, just go read the show notes, dear friends, and learn about the issue. Let's continue to defend life at every stage and phase of development. They call this dignity in dying or dignity at the end of one's life, but I'll say the real dignity is what we are able to kind of embrace other people with. Is the way we embrace other people is the way we come to the defense of other people, because everyone should have the dignity of life. And no, somebody else killing you is not dignity and does not bestow dignity upon you. So dear friends, let's just keep being very much focused on life at every stage and phase of development. Thank you so much.